Hi everyone and welcome to Take 10 for Torah number 942. I hope you all are well. Any questions, comments, suggestions, recommendations, or sponsorships, please email me at rabbiismach@take10fortorah.org. Enjoy this repeated class, which is one of my favorites on the topic of the Mishkan. So this week we discuss the Mishkan, and of course, as we know, we spent a few weeks talking about the Mishkan in the Parsha, and the Mishkan was an important thing. It was, so to speak, the house of God. V'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'socham. You will make me a sanctuary and I will dwell there. So that's a pretty big deal. And as we read the account of how the Mishkan is built, of course, we know that there are a variety of details, very specific details that are shared with us, specific blueprints for not only how the building should be built, but specifically what materials should be used, and what the kelim, what the furniture, the furnishings of the Mishkan are supposed to contain, and exactly how they're supposed to look. So how are we to understand all of the specificity in all of this? So we know the Kli Yakar tells us as follows. He says, "B'masha hiskimu alav kol ha-mefarshim la'asos behem ramazim al inyanim nistarim." You know, people, the mefarshim, those who explain, try to explain in the secret and hidden ways, o neglim, or more obvious ways, ki lo yitachein lomar, it does not make sense to say, shekol pratim elu, that all of these details, hayu below kavana, were without intent. V'alderech zahol churov ha-mechabrim, almost all of the authors suggest, in this way, la'asos behem ramazim ish lefi sechlo, each one tries to offer a hint, an attitude, trying to explain this. Ze omer b'cho, v'ze omer b'cho. One explains this way, one explains that way. V'afilu Rashi shekol dvarav pshutim. Even Rashi, that generally tries to keep his commentary pretty simple. Mikol makom b'makom shamatza lidrosh karav l'pshuto lo hiniach milavara. He doesn't avoid going really over the top in his explanations. Therefore, he says, lo echsoch gamani, I also will not stop, I will not silence myself, mi lomar ma shetalem etudas zichli, what has arisen in my mind, lohosif ktsas al osan ramazim, to add to what others have said. And there are generally two different perspectives. You know, some have this holistic way of explaining all of the different kalim and all the different utensils. Some explain the detail here and the detail here. And what I'd like to do is pretty much show through one particular detail, and I can't remember if I talked about this last year or not, but I'd like to show the different methodologies in one particular very specific detail, and that relates to the Aron. The Aron, of course, was in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. It contained, it was sort of the closet on the floor, which a box which contained very important symbols of Judaism. It contained the Ten Commandments, it contained the jar of the man, the miraculous food that we survived on, and it's so it says, V'asu Aron atzei shitim amasayim v'chetzi arko v'yama v'chetzi rachbo v'yama v'chetzi kama. So it gives the dimensions and the materials. It says it's going to be covered in gold, and then it talks about you're going to make four rings on the sides of it, v'asisa v'adei atzei shitim v'tzipisa osam zahav, and you're going to make poles, and you're going to cover those wooden poles with gold. Okay, and they're going to put the poles in to these rings, to carry them. And of course, these poles were necessary because the Mishkan was inherently transportable. It was a portable house of God which could move around. And so therefore, everything needed poles because everything needed to be carried. But the pasuk continues, within the rings shall these poles be. It cannot leave. It cannot leave the rings. Okay, wonderful. Now, we don't find language like that by other poles of the other kelim. For example, the Mizbeach had badim atzei shitim, v'tzipisa osam nechoshes. There, they were copper, the outside Mizbeach, and you put the badim in, and you no mention over here of not being able to take them out. Again, the Mizbeach hapnimi on the inside also had poles. You put them in, and there is no mention that you can't take them out. So here it seems you cannot take them out. The Gemara learns that when we talk about the poles, so we have two different expressions. One says you're going to put them in, one says you're going to go and never take them out. How could they both be the case? If, you know, you put them in, they theoretically must have been taken out. So the Gemara says, no, what's going on over here is they were movable within the rings. They were able to move, but the outsides of the poles, the ends of the poles were thicker and were unable to be moved, physically unable to be removed from the rings. So once they were in, there was some give and they would go either way within those rings, but they would not be able to be removed entirely. And so our challenge is trying to figure out simply what's going on over here. What would be the reason that by specifically the Aron, this holy thing in the Holy of Holies, you would not have it movable? You would not be able, not be allowed to remove the poles. What was the messaging? What was the idea? What's the imagery over here trying to relate? So let's start with some of the Rishonim, and I'll start with sort of the practical. The practical, the Beis HaBechira, the Meiri, talks about how the reason the poles were able to move is so the weight of the Aron could be distributed properly. Now, there is an idea that the Aron carried those who were carrying it, but still, he presents it as if, no, they were carrying the Aron, and they would need the weight distributed properly, and therefore the Badim needed to move. And so he's explaining why these poles, the Badim, would be movable within the rings, but he's not explaining why they can never leave. But there are those who do. The Chezkuni, for example, says, and we'll start with the practical explanations, and really that's what's fascinating. What's fascinating here is many of the Rishonim really just have practical explanations for why this is, while some have much more lofty and really more poetic reasons. So the Chezkuni says that, first of all, in order for it to not slide, he says that even though they moved, there were shnei charitzin, there were two little grooves which would allow them to catch on the rings, because otherwise it would be sliding around like a mess. So he says there were these grooves. Then he says another idea. You know why it was that they couldn't move the poles? He says it's not that they couldn't move the poles, but why would they move the poles? The reason they had to move the poles outside the Mizbeach and on the Mizbeach HaPnimi, on the inside Mizbeach that was made for the Ketores, is because people would traverse in that area. People would walk around near the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. People, and the copper Mizbeach on the outside, people would walk around the Mizbeach HaPnimi, the Kohanim would walk around and doing the service. And so if you walk around, it's a trip hazard. And of course, you don't want a lawsuit. So you don't want anybody to get hurt. And therefore, the Aron, cause of the fact that it was in the Kodesh Kodashim, it was in the Holy of Holies, where maybe once a year somebody would walk over there, and obviously would be pretty careful walking into the Holy of Holies. So there was no problem. There was no problem leaving them in. It was not a tripping hazard, right? The Badim add, the poles add to the Tzura, the image of this thing, so they should not be removed. The Sefer Achinuch says something also on a practical basis. He says, the reason the poles couldn't move is because this is the most important of all of the kelim, of all of the utensils and furnishings. He says, Penny yet tzrichim latzeis im ha'aron l'shum akam b'mehiros. Maybe they would have to run. They would have to run quickly and run somewhere. Maybe they wouldn't check to make sure the poles were in right. And then it would fall, and that would be terrible. That would be terrible if it would fall. And so the first thing he says is, listen, emergency procedures over here. Everything else maybe wasn't so important. Everything else, maybe you can add the cheskuni that people would trip. But here, you didn't really have that risk, and the reason to keep the poles in are for pragmatic purposes. What if you got to run? You got to run, and nobody can find the poles. Where's that pole again? I can't find my keys. And so therefore, they were never removed. He says another thing, and this, he says, because all of these symbols are there to explain and to teach very important ideals, he says, V'ratza ha-kelitov osenu shelo tafsid oso ha-tzura afilu lefi sha'a. God wanted that we do not lose that image, that symbolism, those lessons for even a moment. And that's why the poles couldn't move. He doesn't address what those lessons might be, but he says it's the image of the Aron with the poles that had to be ingrained in our mind, and therefore those poles couldn't move. So I'll offer two suggestions of what those poles may have meant, more so than just for the pragmatic concerns, but in the loftier idea as well. So the Meshech Chachma says that the Aron represents Torah. The Aron represents the idea of Torah learning, the apex, the highest goals of the Jew, to become one with God, to understand God. The Meshech Chachma explains as follows. If that's the case, what were the poles? Those who support that Torah, those who support the capability. Those are the Tomchei Torah. He says, the Talmid Chacham requires Sa'ad L'Tomcho, a support to support him. Shahay Asher Matel Malei L'Kiso, U'Ketudos Ishromi, gives examples. U'Vizeh Torasom Iskayemes. A Torah, a person who's a scholar, unfortunately is not going to be able to go and have a career, a profession, even to be a rabbi, because they're sitting and studying Torah. So therefore, you need the poles to support them, and without the poles, they cannot last. And so it's talking about the twinning, the marriage between the poles and the Aron, because one equally needs another. And it's so important, that relationship, that they cannot possibly be separated. That's the Meshech Chachma. Rav Hirsch has another very beautiful idea. He says, again, the Aron represents the Torah. But the Torah has to be understood while it is located in the Mishkan. The Asuli Mikdash Veshachanti B'Socham, I make a Mikdash for me, and I will dwell there. We know through the course of course, the Mishkan's travels that it was portable, but more so, the Torah throughout our history has been portable. In the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, one of the magnificent elements of Jewish history is that even though we lost our centralized location of government, we lost our central spiritual location, Judaism was able to, so to speak, be packed up in a suitcase and travel wherever it is we needed to go. That's the lesson of the Poles never leaving the Aron, that no matter where we go, this and the lessons within this Aron are portable and can be taken wherever you are in the diaspora, wherever you need to be, and wherever you ultimately might go. Have a great day.